Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. It's Travis Hornsby, and today we are going to talk about what to do to get your friends' forgiveness too. I think a lot of you might be paying back your loans, some of you are going for 20-year type of forgiveness plans, and some of you are going for public service loan forgiveness. What I want to do is to help give you some tools in your toolbox so you could potentially look like the coolest person on the face of the earth when somebody is eligible for something like the PSLF waiver and you help get all of their loans forgiven. They will love you until their dying day. And so this is going to help some of you who don't really have any idea about the PSLF waiver. I mean, maybe you could use some of this yourself and get a ton of money saved. But I just wanted to give you some of the latest things our team is seeing so that you can help your friends and look really, really good. Because you're obviously somebody who's a lot more of an expert than the typical person just listening to this podcast. First, I wanted to hit up a couple listener questions. We love to do those. Obviously, you can ask yours. Go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail, and you can record one on your phone. First, I want to listen to a question someone has about payment counts under the PSLF waiver. Let's listen.
Thanks so much for your podcast and newsletter. They're always full of really useful information. I have a question about what happens to payment counts when the limited PSLF waiver ends. My eligible payment count and my qualifying payment count both went up significantly under the waiver. I'm still waiting on FedLoan to process the employment certification forms that I sent in 6 months ago, but once those are processed, that should put me at about 104 qualifying payments as of this April, which means I should qualify for forgiveness around September 2023 if the waiver gets extended. My concern is, if they don't extend the limited PSLF waiver beyond October, do the payments that became qualifying payments under the waiver revert to non-qualifying payments after the waiver expires, or do they remain as qualifying payments? Any information you have would be appreciated. Thanks.
Great question. So the question is, what if you don't get forgiveness by the time the PSLF waiver expires? Does that mean too bad, so sad? And the answer, luckily, to this is no, you keep those qualifying payments. That's kind of the whole point of this, is not just to get people forgiveness, it's also to get people closer to forgiveness. Now, what's interesting about this is, as usual, politicians, government leaders, Department of Ed, they have no clue how much this is going to benefit people that are eligible. My guess is we're talking about in the high tens of billions of dollars in terms of how much this is going to benefit people that take advantage of it. A lot of people are going to not take advantage of it, just twiddle their thumbs or frankly, just be unaware of it. That's probably more fair to say. They're just going to be unaware of it. And they're not going to take advantage of it. And actually, I should really not say twiddle their thumbs. Actually, I kind of get worked up about this a little bit because you know what? If we're real honest, who's going to not benefit from the PSLF waiver that could? It's people that don't listen to this podcast or people that have some college completion or people that are not super financially literate, right, that really could use the help. Those are the people that are not going to benefit from this waiver because you actually have to take action to get it. It's not something that's done automatically for you. People that listen to shows like this and who pay for our help are going to get better results than people who don't on average. That's unfortunate, but it's also just kind of the way the world works, right? Think about taxes. You know, if you pay for expert tax help, a lot of times if you pay for really expert tax help, you're going to get a lot better service and a lot better savings than if you don't have somebody like that on your team. So I wish I could kind of wave a wand and fix the world, but I can't. So let me tell you some thoughts about this. So the PSLF waiver credit that you're going to get, that's yours to keep, and it can get you much closer to forgiveness. Like this listener has talked about how he's going to have 104 payments thanks to the PSLF waiver, only 16 away. So a couple thoughts. If he's going to have his forgiven in September of 2023, he probably will not be asked to recertify his loans, most likely, right? Because if you have now the new announcement that was made is you will not be asked to recertify your income before March of 2023. And if you are being asked to do it before then it gets kicked out an additional year. So if you have to recertify your income in February of 2023, now they're going to kick it out to February of 2024. Oh my gosh, that is crazy. Crazy good for people going for forgiveness plans. You know, if you think about what does this mean, this person might be able to just coast off of their old payment that was from 2019's 2018 tax return, right? Because that's when a lot of people certified. If you certified in, geez, like if you certified in February of 2019 last, I mean, I guess you might have recertified in February 2020, right? But let's say you recertified in February of 2020, you probably used your 2018 tax return. You're going to get to carry that through now until February of 2024. Holy cow. So yes, you get to keep all of the payments that you add to your payment count from this PSLF waiver. Another thing to think about is a lot of people have made payments under the wrong kind of plan, extended, graduated, maybe they paid late or something. The ability to get those payment counts added on to your forgiveness credit also ends if you don't submit the public service loan forgiveness ECF form in time. That's the other big thing, is it's not just consolidating old loans that don't qualify. You also want to say, well, are there some loans that have more credit than the other ones? If so, you can consolidate and get credit for at least the loan with the most number of payments. What they're saying now, they did initially say that the loans had to be overlapping, but then they scrapped that. You know, this is why it's so difficult to give advice on this stuff, because they make rules because they're just kind of figuring it out on the fly. And they're like, oh, just kidding, we're going to do something else, which is good because it ends up becoming more and more and more generous. So it's not like we have to walk anything back in terms of some of the advice we give. It just, we have to give even more aggressive advice because of things that we might not have recommended based off of them not being clear in their guidance. And they wonder why the servicers are giving bad information. It's because the Department of Education, in part, can't even figure out what the heck they're doing, right? Sorry, a little frustrated, but you know, it is what it is. So if you have, you know, different numbers of credits on your loans, in general, consolidate. Now, when could this cause problems? If you don't have a partial financial hardship anymore, you might not be able to get on pay or IBR, which means that you might be stuck with ICR or repay, and your payments might be way, way too high. So that's kind of something that we need to look out for. Another thing is we want to avoid recertifying your income if your payment's put off until 2023, maybe the end of 2023. We don't want you recertifying with your new attending income if you consolidate to get an extra 3 months of credit towards the waiver. So there's a lot of like judgment calls that you kind of have to make with this stuff. And that's one of the reasons why we're the busiest we've ever been right now, because a lot of people are realizing, hey, you know what? Instead of me trying to read my own NSLDS file, I'm just going to have them do it. We're happy to. Right now, it's getting a little crazy. And what I'm a little worried about, frankly, is it's going to get absolutely freaking nuts, probably for August, September, and October. If they don't extend this waiver, people are going to find out about it. People are going to realize they're on a deadline. So that's why you definitely don't want to wait if you know that you or a family member or friend could benefit from our advice, or especially around the PSLF waiver. You know, book that stuff now, because in some cases, we already booked out 2 months. So if you do the math, you know, if you wait till August, we might not be able to get you in before the October deadline. And then we're just going to have to probably put out stuff on the podcast, on the newsletter, probably just try to help people do what they can. But PSLF waiver, one of the most life-changing, transformative things I've ever seen in student loans in the 6 years I've been doing this, because I met one of my friends at a coffee shop, one of my wife's friends actually at a coffee shop, who identified based off of a conversation at a Christmas party that she probably could benefit. So she graduated medical school before 2010. Had direct loans that she'd actually consolidated into direct loans, but because her income is really high as an attending, she was not able to make income-based payments on her loans, because that would have been the standard 10-year plan. She would have just have already paid it off, right? So she was on like an extended type of plan, and what we identified is she had more than 120 months of credit, and so we were able to tell her to consolidate. And the funny thing is we recommended consolidation, and the federal website messed up and wouldn't do it. So we had to recommend an alternative route for her to get the same result. What ended up working is we told her to use a different browser. Firefox, for some reason, ended up working, and Chrome wasn't working for her at the time. Just crazy stuff, stupid stuff like that. Like the federal website not working right in the right browser is going to stop a lot of people from getting loan forgiveness. Ridiculous, right? So because we were able to give her advice and help her through the process, she's going to get like six figures forgiven, six figures tax-free, which represents an entire year's worth of salary for her. That's the kind of transformation that you can get for your friends if you know what you're looking for when it comes to this PSLF waiver. So I'm going to, you know, you guys know how I get sort of, I work myself up into a preachy rant or something. So I need to calm down a little bit. Hopefully it makes for an interesting podcast. So let's listen to another listener question from the voicemail line.
Hi, I work for a nonprofit school and have been there for about 20 years. I applied for the public loan forgiveness and I got denied, saying I didn't qualify because it's a PLUS loan. I've gotten various answers that PLUS loans do qualify and others say they don't. Any information on whether PLUS loans qualify for that or not? Thank you.
So I take it to mean Parent PLUS when this listener asked this question. So for whatever reason, they decided to exclude Parent PLUS loans from the PSLF waiver from being able to get credit on this. I'm not exactly clear why, because what they ended up doing is saying, well, if you include at least one other loan that was from your education in a consolidation, then we'll count that. And so what we've seen is some really bizarre cases where somebody has been paying on a loan from their own undergrad for like 20 years. and somehow it's still there, and it's for $3,000, and they have $200,000 of Parent Plus debt. They consolidate the $3,000 loan with a $200,000 Parent Plus they borrowed for their kids, and suddenly the whole thing gets forgiven because they included at least one loan that's not from the kids' education. You know, in a couple other scenarios here, the best way to try to get the waiver to apply to you as a Parent Plus borrower, if you do not have debt from, you know, your own education, is to attempt a double consolidation. It's kind of unclear as to how they're going to treat that and if that could potentially mask the Parent Plus debt being Parent Plus debt in the way that they're just sort of in a automated, scaled kind of way of looking at all this to determine who should get forgiveness and who should not. In general, people that have a lot of Parent Plus need to do double consolidations anyway. So what we're doing for people is doing that first step of the consolidation, you know, via paper or online, depending on what the loans look like. One path might be easier than another. And then we go and complete the second step of the process, giving them the steps on how to complete that. And then when that new loan is finally finished and ready, then go to studentaid.gov/PSLF and go ahead and submit the information needed to be considered for the waiver, because you never know what they're going to do. Basically, what's going on right now is people at the Department of Education are just sort of, they kind of have the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory golden ticket, except they've got thousands of them, right? And they're just kind of trying to figure out what the heck's going on. And they're saying, all right, well, let's give this amount to this person and this amount to this person. And they're like, oh, we didn't think about this special case that like maybe we could have thought about before we made this announcement in this rushed fashion, because we're trying to get this done before the end of the year, before the midterms, before we might lose the ability to do this. So now we've got to come up with these new rules and interpretations sort of on the fly and just apply them. You know, it didn't hurt to apply for this stuff. There's zero negative consequences that happen from you trying for the PSLF waiver and applying for it. Worst thing they can do is just basically say no or not give you as much credit as you would hope to get. And then maybe you could appeal it when they eventually come out with the PSLF appeals process later. So all kinds of stuff going on right now with this PSLF waiver. I want to now transition a little bit to talking about at a high level, what kind of stuff can you do to help your friends get it? So first, let's talk about how much federal student loan debt there was around, say, 2010, okay? Because those are the people that have had, you know, at least 10 years worth of potential credit, potential payments on their loans. So there's like $500 billion, I think. I'm saying this number off the top of my head, okay? There's like $500 billion of debt that I think that was around in 2010, and a lot of that's still around today. Here's one example. There's 10 million people under the FFEL loan program that currently have debt that was obviously around 10 years ago because the FFEL program went out of business in 2010. That's when they ended it, making it all go through the direct loan program. So there's also all the people that had direct loans that had them at least 10 years ago, right? So these are people who graduated from, you know, their graduate school type of programs or master's programs, generally like 2012 and before. So if you graduated from your final degree program before 2012, especially like 2010 and before, and you're in the public sector and you have loans, that's like the person to identify. So you're really talking a lot of like late 30s to early 50s. Those are your real target market people. So really think kind of like very late Gen Xers, like barely qualifying for Gen X, or like the oldest millennials, right? Like these are the people who could have the biggest benefits from the PSLF waiver. Why is that? Remember that you can get complete forgiveness if you consolidate and you have more than 10 years worth of credits, basically payments that you've made on loans after 2007 is like the cutoff. You have to make the payments after October 2007. So what we're trying to do, and we're thinking even about running ads for this because we think that like it's almost like a public service to try to find these people before it runs out. It's like people that like say you graduated from medical school in 2010, for example, okay? Well, you probably borrowed FFEL loans. So you had the wrong kind of loans, right? And you borrowed them from like 2006, 2010. Well, you go into residency program, probably nonprofit, right? So now you go through your residency and now you do, you know, your fellowship, and then you heard about PSLF, and so maybe you consolidate, and now you're an attending, you're making, you know, $300,000 a year, and then you're like, oh shoot, I can't do IBR, income-based, and I don't want to include my spouse's income on repay, so I guess I'm just going to sign up for the standard plan, or the extended, or the graduated, or whatever I can pay. And in a lot of cases, these loans from before 2010 were also issued at super low interest rates, like 3%, even 2%. I don't know why, but that's the way they did it back in the day. And a lot of people rationally decided to hold on to those loans because of the very low interest that was being charged. So a lot of people, especially like I said, mid-career physicians, teachers, lawyers, a lot of those people held on to that debt and just put their money in other stuff, like buying a house, saving for kids' college, maxing out retirement accounts, because it's like a financially rational thing to do. Remember earlier I said there's maybe 10 million people that have these FFEL loans that are completely the wrong kind of loans for PSLF that would have to restart the clock completely without the PSLF waiver. How many people of that group is a nonprofit or government employee? Overall, about 25% of the country works in the public sector. So right off, like, the base case would be 10 million people. Out of that 10 million people, 2.5 million would be people that you would think would be public servants. Now, you also have to be full-time. So maybe only 3/4 of those people would be full-time consistently. This is just a wild number, right, that I'm just throwing out there. Or maybe even just 2/3, maybe to make the math, I don't know, just say 1.5 million of the 2.5 million people are full-time employees for at least 10 years. And then let's say that only, 1 million of those 1.5 million actually have strung together 10 cumulative years of nonprofit or government sector full-time work experience. But still, the reaction should be also, we're not including the direct loans. So the direct loan borrowers, I think, is probably about the same number. So let's just say that there's, 1 million FFEL borrowers and 1 million direct loan borrowers that have at least 10 years of credit, that these people would not have been able to sign up for IBR that easily. They would not have really known about PSLF that early. They probably were under the wrong loan program, the wrong repayment program. Again, people that are the oldest millennials or the youngest Gen Xers. Now, these people, this group of maybe 1 million FFEL, 1 million direct loan borrowers, couple million people, all they have to do is consolidate and then submit their PSLF application after the consolidation is processed, and then wait, and then the debt's probably forgiven completely tax-free. So consider this. So far, in the PSLF waiver, only about 100,000 people have received it. Now, that's a lot of people, but 100,000, it is an absolute fraction of the 2 million people out there that, at a minimum, I think, could get immediate forgiveness if they could consolidate. And so that's why I'm coming to you. I'm saying that, can you do the biggest public service of your professional life and be a little vulnerable talking about your loans and opening up that conversation with your colleagues? And the reason I say that is this. If you don't bring it up and somebody misses out on having a house worth of debt forgiven, did you do them a public service? No, you didn't. The norms and sort of awkwardness of bringing up student loans and the taboos that are involved with it. If the worst thing that happens is you make somebody a little uncomfortable bringing up something that's a little bit of a taboo when you could have eliminated the debt from their life because you're more knowledgeable about loans than they are, or at least you could, if you don't know the details, you could at least tell them, hey, you need to look into this. It doesn't have to be our site or our podcast, by the way. You can Google PSLF waiver. I think one of our guides shows up there if you do that, but the federal website shows up number one. So that's a great link to send to somebody who's skeptical, because I'm going to be real. I would be skeptical of this. If I was some overworked doctor or overworked lawyer and somebody told me about the ability to get all my loans forgiven, I've gotten those robocalls before myself, right? So I would be like, oh yeah, right. What are they kind of coming up with now? No, this is a real thing. So at a minimum, you could point them to the federal website. And then at a maximum, you could point them to the Student Loan Planner podcast. You could point them to our website, tell them that they need to book a call with us. Because if somebody, let me be real straightforward here. If you have any loans at all as a public servant, you need to book a call with us before October 31st. I'm trying to be humble about that because obviously I don't want to sound self-serving, like, oh, this guy just wants money for his business. No, I'm just telling you what we are seeing on the ground. This is literally the craziest stuff I've ever seen in the student loan, just like max savings category. I mean, we save people before the PSLF waiver an average of like 50,000 of long-term projected savings that we find from people not filing taxes the right way, not being on the right loan program, not refinancing when they should, not going for forgiveness instead of trying to pay their loans off, not knowing about community property loopholes, not knowing when one spouse should be on two different plans, not realizing that you can cap your payments, not knowing about the student loan refinancing ladder strategies when you're trying to buy a practice or a house. I could go on, right? There's tons and tons of loopholes we've identified over doing multiple thousands of plans, advising $1.7, $1.8 billion of student loans we save people a ton of money with. But there's very rarely an opportunity where we can just look at somebody and say, yeah, with this single consolidation, all of your debt is gone, tax-free, gone. And like, people are speechless sometimes. We have people break down in tears, just crying. And I'm kind of a weird person. I don't handle emotion very well. I'm a spreadsheet geek, right? But like, it touches you when you realize, oh my gosh, like this person's life is totally different. Like my wife's friend that we were helping, she's probably going to go out and start a business now. She's always been dreaming about starting a business and taking a risk and building her dream house. But now she can afford to build her dream house and take that business risk because she's got enough saved that she was thinking she might have to use on loans. Now she doesn't. People talking about, well, these programs are regressive. Well, so are other things in life. And, you know, Social Security is super underfunded. Medicare is probably $40 trillion of unfunded liabilities. But we all claim it because, you know what? Eventually, it'll get fixed and we're all going to pay taxes to cover it anyway. So you might as well get the benefits that you have available to you and just try to make the most of it and not worry about guilt shaming yourself or feeling like, oh my gosh, like this is ridiculous that they're doing this or whatever. If you have any of those emotions, don't. It's just take advantage of the rules as they exist. Do what you can. Okay. It's kind of like the any number of like tax cuts or benefit programs that you're like, oh, I don't need that. Like, well, you know what? Your tax dollars are going to pay for it anyway. So again, how to identify with your friends about the PSLF waiver. Did they go to school, you know, before 2012 or did they graduate before 2012? That's like the ideal person to talk to about this. But there's plenty of people too that, you know, from 2012 to like now that were on the wrong repayment plan or maybe had some credit that they built up as a teacher before they went back to grad school that they could get added onto their payment count if they consolidated their med school loans with their undergraduate loans. Maybe there's people that, you know, worked for, I don't know, Peace Corps, AmeriCorps or something and made payments on those loans, can consolidate, get that credit added. There's a lot of tricks and tips too to get people closer to forgiveness, which we're also super interested in. I mean, like the government has said, the average person, thanks to the PSLF waiver, is probably going to get 2 years closer to forgiveness because of this. And think about what that means. 2 years of payments based on your income that you don't have to make. That's 2 years of 10% of your income that's being taken off the back end of your forgiveness. And again, what we're finding is a whole lot of public servants have different numbers of credit on different numbers of loans and have a lot of ability to claim the PSLF waiver benefits if they take action. So we're really seeing a whole lot of this. That's why I said anybody who's a public servant who hasn't talked to us since the PSLF waiver got enacted in October of 2021 needs either an initial plan or a follow-up plan, studentloanplanner.com/book. One more point I'd like to make before we close out today's podcast. You guys might have seen that we recently came out with SLP Insurance LLC, which is our disability and term life insurance agency. You might be saying, what are they doing there? So here's kind of what I decided to do. I was looking at how term life and disability insurance gets sold across the industry, and some places are very ethical about it and very professional about it. And some places are really focused on making the sale no matter what. And I thought, well, you know what? At the very minimum, if I can go find a couple of agents that are extremely professional, that will always do the right thing for clients, even if it means not getting any kind of commission out of it, then that would be something that I'd be interested in doing and trying to provide a resource for people that are shopping around for the best disability insurance, own occupation, own specialty policy. And we finally, I think, found that through Pradeep and Matt, who I hope to have on the podcast here soon. Basically, what we're doing is for people that go through our studentloanplanner.com/DIS. So studentloanplanner.com/DIS for, you know, disability insurance. Basically, we're having people fill that form out. And then if there's anything that could jeopardize you getting a guaranteed standard issue policy, which is like this automatic no underwriting policy, then we don't submit any kind of quotes if you mention any medical conditions to make sure that there's no jeopardization of that. So some residency programs, some hospitals have these guaranteed no underwriting policies that you can get. But if you apply somewhere else, then the ability to get that no underwriting required policy is maybe void, right? So we're really careful about that. That's why we ask, you know, tell us all your medical conditions on that form so that we can make sure that we don't jeopardize anything there. And some places don't do that. Again, looking for the sale, what are you going to do? You're just going to get somebody's information and submit applications regardless. So, and some people, right? Now, there's sometimes unique specialty and residency and hospital-based discounts that you can get. So there might be maybe one hospital. I'm just going to make up one, okay? But let's say Stanford has this unique discount that's only available for Stanford residents that might be better than anything you can get from an independent brokerage. Maybe that's the case. If that's the case, what our team is going to do is find you that policy that's cheaper, regardless of whether or not it results in any revenue to us. And I think that this is really important because our typical finding and a lot of our student loan consultations is people's student loans don't have to get in the way of their financial goals. They're in great shape to achieve those goals. And the only thing that could set them back financially at a family level is if something happened to their ability to earn an income, either through disability, which is far more likely, or premature death, which is why if you have dependents, you also get a good term life insurance policy. And people tend to be very undercovered for both of these is what we're finding. So anyways, I just mentioned this because residency season is starting up and people are matched or they know where they're going for their post-training job. Most people who buy these policies are physicians, dentists, veterinarians, CRNAs, medical professionals. Sometimes people that are very, very high income individuals, like a big law associate married to somebody with a very low income, might buy one of these disability insurance policies because, let's say you've got a huge mortgage. Well, if something happens to your ability to earn income, severe back pain, you know, something like that, where you can't sit at a desk and work, then that ability to stay in that home is at risk. And, you know, for people that are medical professionals, this is just a lot more no-brainer because, you know, you can understand how one T-bone car accident could break one of your hands you use to do procedures, and then settling the $400,000 of student loans you invested plus years of your life is not going to allow you to earn the income that you would have been able to earn, which is why you want a policy that's own occupation. Because, you know, if you buy an any occupation policy, that means, you know, if you're in a wheelchair, you'll get paid, but maybe not if you have that broken hand. So that's why our team's like really careful about trying to find the right coverage for the least expensive price. So would love for more people to ask questions about that. StudentLoanPlanner.com/DIS if you want to get a quote on that. We'll probably have an episode where we talk about disability insurance because I think a lot of stuff's bought that's not really what people need. So excited to launch that part of our business. We've got a lot of updates and content and stuff we've been working on during the pause that I think is going to help you save money and give you more resources to do stuff that you need to do anyway. And I'm really excited for our team's just transformational impact in people's lives. If you're getting all of your loans forgiven, oh my gosh, that's like the best feeling ever, right? So we want more people to get that benefit. And you can be a key part of that by sharing Student Loan Planner podcast with your friends, sharing StudentLoanPlanner.com with your friends, and just telling them about programs like the PSLF waiver that you find out more details about on podcasts like this. Finally, remember, if you're a public servant, book a plan because we will not be able to accommodate probably if you wait until the last second. So StudentLoanPlanner.com/book. Check that out. And thank you so much for listening to today's show. Hope you have a wonderful week.